If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56steve@.com. Lower.com, equal housing lender, MLS 112-4061.
Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN, and this will be a fascinating conversation, or your money back, overcoming your child's fear of dogs, a step-by-step guide for parents with Stephanie Cohn. And Stephanie, the author of that very book, is right here. Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I am good. I'm curious as to what motivated you to write this book.
Well, it all started a long time ago when my own daughter, Becky, out of the blue, she was five, she announced she was afraid of dogs. I didn't know what to do with that.
Did you at the time have a dog?
We did not have a dog. My mother had a dog, and that was the one dog she was okay with because the dog was older and calmer, but her friends had dogs. She didn't want to go on a play date or to the playground. And as far as I knew, nothing bad had happened to her with the dog. I just didn't understand it. So I searched high and low for ways to help her. It turns out kind of synchronistically, we were going to visit my sister in California who had a wonderful dog. And Becky was afraid of the dog and it was quite stressful for the first day or two. And then Kathy and I, my sister, just sort of started doing exposure therapy and giving Becky some control without knowing that's what we were doing.
And now you know how to do it. You're a licensed clinical social worker, and also you were greatly responsible for developing Overcoming Fear of Dogs, a protocol which now others use as well in the field. You know, so here's the thing. I can tell you in detail about fear periods that puppies go through at a certain age. I'm wondering if children go through that same, because that's not my expertise. It's yours.
Right.
If they have the same sort of thing happen.
Well, they do. And depending on the age of the child, there are certain fears, either sort of imaginary fears like monsters in the dark when they're little. Then when they're a little bit older, then they start being more afraid of possible real things that might happen, like burglars, things like that. But the fear of dogs is not necessarily a fear that all children go through.
In fact, here's what I thought. Based on my research. So what we know is that human beings evolved with dogs.
Yes.
And that as a result of that, dogs, in fact, understand us innately quite well. And that two carnivorous, although I understand human beings are omnivorous, but no two carnivores actually worked together in the history of this planet, as far as anyone knows, and developed a relationship like humans and dogs have. I mean, if you can imagine, I mean, there are some people who say, including friends of mine in the veterinary field, well, dogs have gone from the backyard into our homes, into our bedrooms, onto our beds. And, well, there's a degree of truth in that for sure. The reality is that back when we were Cro-Magnons living in wherever, caves or huts or both, at some point in time, we shared that space with what were not even quite yet dogs. They were wolf dogs still evolving into dogs, probably more closely at that point related to wolves, a species now long gone, incidentally. But we trusted them with their little cubs, and they trusted us with our babies and vice versa. I suppose when a mistake happened and the dog ate our baby, then that was the end of the dog. And that's in fact how it happens, that they became more and more developed into our companions, more and more domestic over time. I say all that. That's a long way to say. Some say we are hardwired actually hardwired to do certain things no matter what age when we see a dog. For example, hormones in our head, just walking down the street, you see a dog, they do a happy dance. We know that is the case for most people, not everyone, and we'll talk about the not everyone's in a moment, and that's what this book is about greatly. But our children, this is the longest question I've ever asked, our children, our children hardwired, unless something happens, to like dogs.
I don't think so. It makes sense that you say that, but honestly, the majority of children and people that I know who struggle with the fear of dogs have not had anything negative actually happen to them. Some have, of course, but the majority of kids who come to me or call me, it's their personality. They tend to be more cautious. They have big imaginations, and we're afraid of things we don't understand. So they don't understand dogs. So that's a big part of what I try to do, is educate people on how to read dogs, how to know when it's safe to be near a dog, when a dog is asking for space. So there are four ways, in my experience, that the fear develops. And the most prevalent way, I don't have statistics on this, it's just anecdotal, is just a personality. And that's how it was with my daughter.
Okay, so you said there are four ways. One is what you just said, the personality of the individual. A second would be, I assume, a negative experience. You've written about it in the book, and I'm looking for where you have it in the book, but I can't turn the pages fast enough.
I know it by heart.
Yep.
So, yes, something negative happens to you. Now, there are, you know, biting incidents and terrible things like that. But there are also things that somebody else might not think was negative. A dog might jump up on you. One child might become terrified, and another person might just go about their business. So it's the perception of it being a negative event.
And you said there were four things. What is the fourth?
Yeah. The next one is seeing a negative thing happen to someone else.
Hmm.
So if I see a kid get knocked over at the playground, I might then become afraid of dogs. Or the last way is just sort of being taught that dogs are dangerous, or hearing about a situation where someone was hurt by a dog.
And when we come back, we'll dive more deeply into this. Listen, I promised a fascinating conversation. I think we're delivering. Mm-hmm. And most importantly, before we're done today, What do you do if a child or a child you know, whether it's your child or not, is fearful of dogs? There is a solution or there isn't? We'll find out all of that with Stephanie Cohn on WGN. Stephanie Cohn authored this fascinating and important book, Overcoming Your Child's Fear of Dogs, a step-by-step guide for parents. And I say important for a whole lot of reasons, because dogs are everywhere. We have more dogs, like it or not, in America than we've ever had before. Over 70 million dogs. By the year 2030, the estimates are that we will have 100 million dogs. And as it is right now, we have more dogs in America than we have children. So the reality is that dogs are here to stay. And most dogs are not a problem. But having said that, we also have a record number of dog bites, and that number is increasing, and that has something to do with all of this. But you said that there are four ways in which a child may develop that fear of dogs, and a lot of it has to do with the personality of the child. At what point in time can a parent say, you know what, I see some cautiousness here in my child? What do you do then? Do you get a dog? Do you get a puppy? A lot of people do. And you, by the way, in your book, I know what the answer is going to be. She's going to say, maybe not. That might not be the answer, but go ahead.
Yes. So I think the majority of kids come to me around the ages of 7 to 9. That's when sleepovers start, birthday parties at home start, and if a child has a fear of dogs, they don't want to go anywhere where there is a dog. So that starts to add stress to the family. It's socially and emotionally debilitating for kids. So that's when most parents will contact me or reach out for help. When children are little, 3, 4, 5, and they seem cautious around dogs, which, by the way, I recommend. I think you should always be cautious around dogs. And every interaction with a child who's 9 and under should be supervised by a responsible adult. I think that's where the dog bites are coming from.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
Know better.
No, okay. I absolutely agree with you.
You know, so I all kind of always say this, you know, we teach kids how to use a microwave. We teach them to be safe online, to stop, drop, and roll with a fire. A lot of parents, mainly because maybe they don't know, don't teach kids how to safely interact with a dog. And if that starts at age 1, I think you're good to go.
I so agree with you. So here's what I say when I talk about this at veterinary meetings, actually, Stephanie. I say that if you see a toddler, because the defense that I've heard, the other side of that coin that I've heard from people who are far more expert than I in child psychology and experts on children and all the rest, say the don't have the learning ability at a very young age. But I say, you know what, there's got to be something that, here's what I mean, and this is the example I give. A 2-year-old goes and sticks somehow his or her finger onto a fire, maybe on the stove, or into an electric socket, you are not going to say, oh, Johnny, Jill, don't do that. You're going to say, stop! Because this could be quite harmful, obviously, to a child. And you are not going to be subtle about what you do. But we don't seem to be expressing the same importance with our own family dogs, or for that matter, any dog, when a child pulls a dog's ear or a dog's tail. Mm-hmm. Do you think that children can and should be learning from a very, very young age?
1,000,000%. When a child grabs a toy, or I saw this with my 100-year-old mother-in-law and my 7-month-old grandson, he went to reach for her. And she took his hand and said, nice, not, you know, she showed him what to do, which you could also do with a dog that would accept that. So kids are not too young. If they have lots of pleasant, supervised experiences with dogs, the chances of them developing the fear go way down. And I will also say my sister, and this was my mother's fault, got bit by our German Shepherd because she pulled his tail. But she did not develop a fear of dogs because she'd had a layer of protection from that because she'd had many, many positive experiences before that.
So even in children, and again, you write about this in your book, Overcoming Your Child's Fear of Dogs. And I learned so much in reading your book, but one of those things that I learned, even in children of a certain age, not very young children necessarily, but if they have that what you call layer of protection at the age, I'm about to make up an age here, at the age of 12 even, that young, then they will not develop that fear even if a dog is done wrong to them?
I don't want to make that like a full statement. But it's possible. And also, I think it depends on the nature of the event that happens.
And I suppose the personality of the child as well, from what you've written.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Some children have come to me after having been chased by a dog. And of course, my number one rule is if you feel afraid of a dog, there are two things you must never do. One is run, because they're hardwired to chase things that move. And also, don't scream or yell or make yourself interesting. You want to be boring. Most dogs, correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, most dogs will ignore boring and move on to something interesting.
Absolutely. That is true. So your child is afraid of a – let's say – I want to talk about prevention a little bit. Does growing up with a dog – can that be preventive, assuming the dog and the dog is a dog that likes children?
Yes. If you grow up with a dog or have a relative with a dog and you have lots of good experiences with the dog, you're probably not going to develop a fear.
Now, I touched on this a little bit. Why are we even talking about this? Why is this so important? Why is cynology, which is the fancy term for fear of dogs?
Yep.
And
cynophobia.
Yeah. Why? Thank you. Why is that an important thing in the first place?
Well, you said it. Dogs are everywhere. And you know, if you're afraid of spiders or heights, you can kind of have a normal life. If you're afraid of dogs, you don't want to go to Starbucks because somebody might have a dog there. You might not want to go to a soccer game and watch your kid play soccer because someone might have a dog. It can really be debilitating. And I also work with adults who have the fear. And every one of them has said, I wish my parents had taken this seriously when I was younger.
Well, we are taking it seriously, and we'll continue to do that. On WGN, we're talking to Stephanie Cohn, the author of Overcoming Your Child's Fear of Dogs, a step-by-step guide for parents. What can parents do about it? Can they do anything about it? We'll find out when we come back. I have a major announcement to make, and it goes right along with the conversation we've been having with Stephanie Cohn about her book, Overcoming Your Child's Fear of Dogs, because dog bite numbers are skyrocketing. They really are. And something motivated me to do something, at least what I can do, about that to make a difference. And here's what happened. Real life story. I'm just walking down the street with our dog at the time. She has since passed away. Her name was Hazel, and she's just sniffing at the grass, about 16 years old at that time. So she didn't want anything to do necessarily with other dogs walking by or anything. I mean, she was just content sniffing at the grass like dogs do. And there was a dog right near us, just a couple feet away, this kind of mid-sized dog that was also sniffing around. And at one point in time, the woman with that dog says to me, out of the blue, "Don't you want to pet my dog?" And I looked at the dog and instantly said, "No, thank you." And she walked away angry at me, clearly. She was like, do you not like dogs? She had that look on her face. She was clearly surprised by my response. But her dog was pulling at the leash in the opposite direction. The tail was out straight vertically, and also the ears were back a little bit. This dog wasn't growling or jumping or anything like that, but the dog was clearly to me, clearly saying in a somewhat subtle but obvious way to the dog, and obvious to me because this is what I do, saying, "I don't want to interact with you right now." Now, why the dog didn't want to interact, I don't know. Maybe the dog was pulling in the direction of home because the dog was hungry. Maybe the dog really didn't like strangers, and this, I assume she was this was the owners of the dog who was holding the leash, but whoever was holding the leash wanted the dog to be more social, and this dog wasn't particularly social with strangers. I don't know why the dog didn't want to be petted, but clearly that was the case. And had I pet this dog, the dog would it have bitten me? Probably not, but possibly it could have gone to the next level. It's called this ladder of aggression. And maybe or maybe not. I didn't want to find out, though. I mean, for whatever reason, this dog didn't want to interact. So one thing is, yeah, I didn't want to get bitten. But there's another factor, too. Don't dogs at some point in time now have the right to say, "I just don't want to be pet. I don't want to interact." And as sentient beings, personally, I do believe they have that right. And this is why I wrote a book that'll be out very, very soon called Ask the Dog. It's a kid's book, and it's about reading dogs, asking not only the person with the dog, but the dog, "Can I pet?" Overcoming Your Child's Fear of Dogs, a step-by-step guide for parents. Licensed clinical social worker Stephanie Cohn is here. She developed Overcoming Fear of Dogs, or OFOD, as it's called, a protocol for professionals to use. We'll talk about what you can do, if anything, as a parent. We've been talking a bit about prevention. And also, I happen to mention this term, and you did too, cynophobia, which is the fear of dogs. I mean, who knew there was a term for that? But there is. And in fact, there has never been so much cynophobia, according to several organizations who follow this sort of thing. Why, if you agree with those organizations, Stephanie, are we seeing more fear of dogs than ever before? Is it as simple as there are more dogs than ever before, or maybe it's being diagnosed more than ever before?
I think both of those. I also think, you know, we're seeing more anxiety in general for everything. And it's possible that some of that generalized anxiety can becomes focused and becomes sort of a fear of dogs or a fear of something else. By the way, I just kind of want to add that cynophobia is an anxiety disorder that mental health organizations recognize, and most insurance companies will cover treatment.
Really? And in fact, yes. Rainbow Animal Assisted Therapy in Chicago offers treatment and at a very low cost anyway. You might want to check that out if this relates to you. But all right, I'll go there now. Your child, you believe, has a fear of dogs. Do you immediately find a professional or an organization like Rainbow Animal Assisted Therapy that might be able to help you? Or can you do some of this at home yourself?
Well, I think it depends on your own level of fear of dogs. If you're comfortable with dogs, you absolutely can. In fact, I'll plug the book. Chapter 5 has detailed steps for how to do an exposure therapy session. You have to find the right dog and the right handler. But once you do that, and if you have a good relationship with your child, there's no reason why you can't help them feel more comfortable with dogs.
Let's talk about what might not work, depending on the age of the child or not. I am guessing that logic, even for adults, you know, that mm-hmm. you say to that adult who is truly terrified, has a phobia. And maybe we should define mm-hmm. what phobia is, because there's a difference between, I think, from my amateur perspective, being hesitant about dogs and actually having a phobia.
Yeah, really good point. So the fear of dogs is a spectrum. There could just be someone who, if they see a loose dog somewhere, they panic a little bit, but they are able to live their life. And then there are people like the gentleman I'm working with now who lives in a pet-friendly apartment building. He will not take the trash to the trash room because he has to pass a door where two dogs live. That's a phobia. It's debilitating. When it impacts your life like that, it's considered a phobia.
And where I was going is that talking to this gentleman, for example, I suspect mm-hmm. that reasoning with him, well, these dogs are behind a door. These dogs have never hurt anyone yeah. before. These dogs are very friendly dogs. You could tell because mm-hmm. they're happy. They're wagging their tails. They're doing all these things. That, my guess, Stephanie, does no good whatsoever.
That is correct. In fact, if you try to talk someone out of a severe fear like that, they often dig their heels in more and need to prove that, yes, they are afraid. So the first thing you need to do is just accept the fear and say, I get it, you're afraid. Let's see how we can help you.
And I suspect that hollering or yelling at that person, including children, because I've seen that happen, you know, where mom yeah. or dad or somebody, not necessarily mom or dad, says, what are you, crazy? Stop it! That yeah. dog is happy. Yeah. And, you know, the dog gets stressed because you're yelling, but that's yeah. beside the point. My thinking is we're only human, so I understand why we do those things, but that is not helpful either.
No, it's not. And that's why, you know, through exposure therapy and we titrate up with exercises and interactions with appropriate dogs makes the most sense, because being afraid is feeling out of control. So we need to help people feel in control. Is even that, if it means
I'm
that
sorry,
you're just going to go ahead.
No, I'm sorry to interrupt. Is that feeling of control almost the secret weapon? But then how do you get there? And you used some fancy terms there. Titrate up was one of them. Exposure therapy was the other. So can you define those?
Yes, I certainly can. So exposure therapy is just what it sounds like. We expose you to what you're afraid of, but we do it in a thoughtful, controlled, predictable manner. So I say all we're going to do is we're going to stand a safe, what you feel is a safe distance from the dog, and we're going to observe the dog. And just also as an aside, which I've actually come to realize as I do this, when you have that kind of fear, you often go into fight or flight, which means you've got adrenaline going, you might have physical feelings. So it takes about 10 minutes, some deep breathing, some talking about maybe baseball, for you, your body to calm down and to become amenable and open to now talking about the dog. So titrating basically means we move up from the least threatening exercise to the most challenging. I'm going to use the word challenging. So we start with looking at the dog. With a little luck, we're petting, we're brushing, we're walking the dog. We also practice what to do if a loose dog is running up to you. I coach the kids to turn sideways and cross their arms and be boring. So we practice all these things in a safe, what controlled environment so that when they go out into the world, hopefully, they will know what to do if they feel scared.
Well, and when we come back, we'll talk about that in more detail, how exactly you would teach. Not only, you know, I was thinking before I did this interview, we'll talk only about children, but you're totally correct. Adults have fear of dogs, too. But the thing that I have found, and we'll hear your opinion when we come back, is that many adults are content with having that fear of dogs. They don't want to, or maybe they're afraid to do anything about it. I don't know. We'll hear your opinion about all that and why having this fear of dogs can truly impact everything you do as an adult. And we'll hear about that when we come back with Stephanie Cohn, the author of Overcoming Your Child's Fear of Dogs on WGN. Experts suggest that there has never been so much cynophobia, which is a fear of dogs. Do you know where that is, Stephanie Cohn, on the scale? Is it fear of heights, fear of dogs, fear of being in close places for either adults or children, where that fear of dogs is? I know it's moved up on the list, but do we know where that is on the list? Does anyone track this?
If they do, I'm not aware of it, but it would be very interesting to track. However, like we said, the fear, being afraid of dogs affects daily life, going to the bus stop, all kinds of things. If you're afraid of heights, maybe you just don't go on a ladder. So I'm not exactly sure how you would track that. But to your point, it's increased. And I think the pandemic had something to do with that because people didn't get normal daily exposures to dogs unless you had your own dog. Because nobody was going anywhere. And a lot of people got dogs, and a lot of people did not do their due diligence in training the dogs.
Now, there are colleagues of yours who would say if you're afraid of heights, actually do go up on the ladder. That's called flooding. Is it a good idea for someone who's afraid of dogs? I think I know what the answer is here, but someone who's afraid of dogs to, all right, we've got dogs. We know they're friendly dogs. We're going to put you in a room with those dogs, and you'll have to deal with it. Is that at all the right way to do it?
Absolutely not. In fact, well-meaning therapists who don't, what separates me, and I hope other people will do this, is I take my mental health training and I pair it with working with an actual dog. But a lot of therapists who help people with this fear will make well-meaning suggestions like go to the dog park. Go, you know, a pet store might be different, although I don't like pet stores. It is terrifying for somebody to be flooded like that.
So
go ahead.
Right. No, I get that. And it's the same in the world of dog training. Flooding is the last thing you want to do. However, what you can do, and you were talking about gradual exposure. So let's go into that just a little more, how that would actually look. Would going to a dog park be a good idea? But let me finish. Not actually going into the dog park, but walking by at a distance where you don't feel threatened or feared because you know there's a fence around the perimeter of that park, and then getting closer to the park over time, still not going into the park, and then maybe a friend or neighbor's dog who maybe this person has seen before, then actually, and some have told me, you even start more basic than that. For some people, you take some magazine ads that have pictures of dogs,
because
studies have been done to show, I think, that the stress hormone actually increases when you just look at a picture of a dog if you have that predisposed panic attack.
Yes, and so there's something called anticipatory anxiety, which you might experience if you know you're going to go get a coffee and there might be a dog there. So you haven't even seen the dog yet, but you're already really stressed. I'm not a fan of dog parks anyway. We have no control over what's happening within that fence. I would say if you're going to do that, do it after you've done all the other things that I would suggest.
Oh, and note, I never said go into the dog park. I know, but
even watching, because you might see dogs barking and running, and until you really understand what's playful and what's aggressive, I personally don't think I could recommend that unless I went with them.
How important is it to teach these folks who are afraid of dogs, whether they be children or adults, what dogs are communicating? They're communicating with us all the time. And as well as we know dogs, I'd argue they know us far better than we know them. And sometimes so people will say the dog's wagging its tail. It doesn't matter if the dog is barking. Well, that's not all. A wagging tail just means excitement. It doesn't mean happy excitement necessarily, as one example. Do you teach dog, quote unquote, dog language to people?
Yes, I do. And that's the first thing I do, actually, before we even start with a real dog. We look at pictures of dog body language. We look at the play bow. We look at what, you know, the stress signals, the licking the lips, the flicking the tail. We do all of that so that somebody feels in control. Again, like when I see this dog, I'm going to be able to scan it and see, am I safe with this dog? It's, you know, it's like crossing the street. We've learned to do it. We can tell how fast a car is going, that kind of a thing. It's the same thing with dogs, and most people are unaware of the subtleties of dog body communication. But I think that's the number one thing to do.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, and you were ahead of me. You answered that most people, you say, kind of have misconceptions about what the dog is really telling them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, you're really the expert here. But you know, a wagging tail could be that it's happy and interested to meet you. It could also be, if it's paired right with a stiff body and staring eyes and it's going slowly, that could be, let me get out of here.
Yeah, and incidentally,
the whole body.
Incidentally, it matters whether the dog is wagging to the left or wagging to the right. I mean, we know these things.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so we know these things now that we didn't know X number of years ago. So here's the thing. You have an adult that is not only worried or fearful of dogs, but actually has cynophobia, has a phobia about dogs. And you have a child with that same issue. Can an adult be helped if that adult wants to be? And can a child be helped? Or better than use the word help, I'll ask about the word cure. Is there a cure for this for both adults and children?
I've been able.
She didn't say yes.
No, I'm thinking, can it be cured? I'm not sure about cured. Can you learn to coexist with dogs and feel comfortable with them? Absolutely. I have been able to help almost everyone that has come to me, with two exceptions, and one I think I still did help. There was a girl who would not get more than 10 feet near a dog, but she was able to go to her soccer games and play soccer because she was able to coexist with dogs off in the distance. So I put that in the win column. Then there was a 17-year-old football player who was so panicked that he locked himself in his room when I came with my therapy dog to work with him, and he would not come out with it for anything, even $100. So that was the one, so far, the one person I haven't really been able to help. He was just too afraid. You have to be motivated to want to push yourself out of your comfort zone. That's why the 8 and 9-year-olds are perfect, because they want to go to that party. They want to go on that play date.
Well, I'm sure I'll want to talk with you again. And for those who haven't picked up the book, it's called Overcoming Your Child's Fear of Dogs. I don't think it's a topic we've gone deep into ever on this radio show that's been around now for nearly 30 years on WGN, a step-by-step guide for parents. Stephanie Cohn, thank you so much. Ever wonder what's going on inside your cat's brain when you cuddle or play together? A recent study sheds light on how different type of cat-human interactions can influence the release of oxytocin. That's a hormone that's sometimes called the love chemical or the love hormone. Now, we know that in dogs, you pet a dog and you have a release of oxytocin. It's healthy for us. Even when you look at a dog, there is a release of oxytocin, unless you happen to have, as we've been talking about, a fear of dogs. I don't know, but I bet even some of those people afraid of dogs have that release of oxytocin, though I don't know that. But what about cats? So for the first time, it's been studied. And cats do have a release of oxytocin when they interact with people that they like or love and feel comfortable with. And we have that same release. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.